Ready to elevate your career with a professionally published book? Are you simply not sure where to start? Have you been searching down the internet rabbit hole for a self-publishing resource worth your time? Your search ends here, my friend. Let's walk the publishing path together and bring your book to life with the Publishing for Professionals podcast. I'm here to coach thought leaders, executives, and speakers on how to successfully self-publish your book while avoiding common pitfalls. I'm Lana Liquidy-Smarges, chief ghostwriter, editor, and founder of Unicorn Publishing Company, and have stood by the sides of many professionals just like you to walk them through the publishing process and successfully launching their book. Every industry pioneer faces the same daunting challenges: how to convert your hard-earned wisdom into a book that builds legacy with a voice that reflects your personal and professional brand. Join me each week to acquire practical wisdom and proven strategies and find out what the traditional publishing companies simply don't want you to know. Let's work together to tell your story with a book. This is more than just a podcast. It's your roadmap to becoming a published author. Get ready to write your blueprint for book publishing success with the Publishing for Professionals podcast.
Hi, future authors. This is Lana Liquidy-Smarges, ghostwriter here at Unicorn Publishing Company, bringing you another episode of Publishing for Professionals. And today I have a special guest, and I'm really excited to have him on because today my guest is going to be talking about how hard it is to find a traditional publisher. And my guest today is John Graham, and John is an author. His story is a fictionalized version of the second chance philosophy underpinning his nonprofit organization, which is called Good Samaritan Home. It is also everyone's story on some level because his book, titled Running as Fast as I Can, vividly portrays a traumatic period in our history while grappling with intense emotional and social issues we still face today. It's an epic journey for love and forgiveness, but most importantly, it is a page-turner story that readers will identify with because it truly is, on some level, everyone's journey. So I'd love to welcome to my show today, John Graham. John, welcome to the Publishing for Professionals podcast.
Very glad to be here this morning.
Super excited for you to come on here and tell your story because I'm always telling people how hard it is to get a traditional publisher. And a lot of people think a traditional publisher will do all of these fabulous things for them. And I have to explain to them that it won't. But let's first talk about your book, Running as Fast as I Can. I talked a little bit about it in the intro, and I know you have a story behind your book. So first of all, tell us, what is your book? Is it fiction, nonfiction? And then why did you decide to write it?
I was going to write a story 50 years ago when I was living in my truck and traveling the country, trying to do a Jack Kerouac type of blue highway approach. And I found out that you can't live like that. I had a Royal typewriter in the back of the truck, but I had nothing to say. So I put it away. I went through a series of detours over the next 30 years trying to find where I fit. And at 53, I founded Good Samaritan Home as a place for second chances. It's a nonprofit, but we work primarily with men and women coming from prison who need a second chance. But what happened was I found that even though I hadn't been to prison, I understood from my background their need for a second chance. They were just more extreme. We live in a culture that legally and morally, we say we believe in second chances. But the truth is that particularly in today's harsh political climate, we don't give many second chances. We started Good Samaritan Home thinking it would be welcomed in the community, but we were met with horrendous blowback from all levels, from the neighborhood to the city council, all the way up the food chain. And it took us years. It was a violent blowback. I had police protection at one point. In fact, somebody stabbed me in front of the courthouse. So holy moly. Because the idea was you're bringing those people, and those people are always laden with race, of course. And even though the numbers in prison are predominantly white, emotionally, we don't believe that in white communities. We believe those people are others who don't look like us. We had to work very slowly and very delicately to win the community. What I found was that if I present data and say, here's recidivism proof that we are a benefit to the community, nobody gives a damn. They don't hear data. So what I started doing was writing newspaper columns, fun columns, story columns, trying to tell stories about second chances. I found that you can gather more support with honey than you can with vinegar because people hear stories. That's why television is so popular. So what I decided to do, and this was well into Good Samaritan Home, well past all the negative, I sat down at age 65 and started writing the story I started to write 50 years earlier. Yes, it was based to a degree on my journey, but it was not an autobiography. It's a fictional story of Daniel Robinson coming from abuse and neglect and poverty, and how he journeys to find connection. He's constantly needing a second chance because he doesn't have the structure. It's a story for those of us who are born, I call it born in the wild. We're left to ourselves and we just don't know what to do. And we make mistakes, particularly those of us who have a degree. We think we're smarter, but we're not equipped. That's the problem. We're too smart, but not nearly skilled enough. And so we end up making more bad choices. What I found with the story, I kept writing and writing and writing. And after about 7 years, I had this tome that I thought would be New York Times bestseller. So I started soliciting agents. I was very methodical because I'm trained as a journalist. So I know how to pursue a story. And I pursued agents. I was met with a resounding sound of silence. I had 200 rejections from the literary agents. I mean, it was resounding. But the smartest thing I did, Lynn, was I hired an editor. And this guy, I had come in contact with him, and I thought he understood the emotion of the story. To him, it wasn't just something, it's another vampire story. It was a passionate story of a young man's struggle to find himself. I compared it to Forrest Gump, going through the 60s and 70s. You pull in all that that history, and you bring an emotional story into it. And he, for 2 years, we went back and forth, and he taught me how to emotionally layer, like Ken Burns does with his documentary. How do you take an 1864 picture and make me cry over it? That's mm-hmm. what he taught me how to do. And the end result was that we started submitting the book for a contest, and we came back getting award after award after award. Now, the trick, how do we publish it? Because I was rejected. So I contacted someone, and she was a publicist who taught me the ins and outs, and I formed my own publishing company called Don Quixote Press. And that gave me the literary control, and it also gave me the emotional control. So I wasn't depending on some stranger who was looking for the next teenage werewolf story that, you know, that may be popular, but my story was the one you're gonna laugh over, you're gonna cry over, you're gonna have Kleenex. The reports coming back from the readers is that they couldn't stop reading it because they felt it was their story. I was extremely pleased with the response, and I've been looking at the data of what happens with traditional publishing. And on a good day, if you sell 500 copies of your novel in traditional publishing, that's the norm. Most books don't sell the millions you think. Only John Grisham does. Kristen Hanna does. But they are anomalies. You may have a great story, but it's all about getting it out there in the public. And that takes work and it takes passion. And my publicist taught me how to be passionate. So I'm all over Facebook. I've learned to speak TikTok. My granddaughters have taught me how to do it.
That's awesome.
I've learned, I'm constantly learning how to publicize and speak Amazon ad. How do I speak TikTok ad? And the end result was that we've won 33 awards for literary excellence with the book. And here's the best part. I haven't gotten rich, but we've sold 12,000 copies. And that means that we're far, far ahead of what the New York agents would have done. The most important thing, Lynn, is that we've generated conversations, not about the book, but it's about second chances. And the book has been a jumping point for me to talk about the current political climate and how much hostility we have towards denying people a new chance, a second chance. If we call them immigrants, if we say they don't look like us and they have a foreign language or a foreign religion, then we are afraid of them. We call them rapists and murderers. And the truth is that we were all, and we are all, immigrants. And that's what makes us great, is that melting pot. And that's Daniel's story. The idea is that all of us have a limp. All of us are broken on some level. But if we have a second chance and with community, we can walk normal by doing this, leaning on one another. That's why I think story has resonated.
Yeah, that's a really important social message, I think, absolutely, on a lot of different levels. Because, yeah, all of us have made mistakes, right? And some of us have made bigger mistakes than others, but that doesn't mean you shouldn't have a second chance. And I think, to your point you were saying earlier, a lot of people embrace the feeling of, yes, we should give people a second chance, but then when it comes in their backyard, they don't want to do it. they think, oh, we should have a second chance in someone else's backyard kind of deal. But yeah, I think if we're going to really thrive as a community, we need to really embrace everyone, not just the people we want to embrace, right? Because that's part of our community. Those people are still part of our community. And so we need to embrace them and support them the best we can to help them be their best. So how a good society works. But I have a ton of questions for you because, oh my gosh, all of these things you threw out were just so amazing gems. So first of all, I want to go back because you said you were rejected 200 times by different publishers. So fill in some questions here. So that means that you actually wrote a book proposal and then you actually sent that to 200 different publishers and they all said no.
Yes, most of them didn't even bother to respond, but I would say 95 wrote back and said, sorry, Charlie.
Okay, so when they responded back to you, did they tell you specifically why they rejected your book? Like they didn't like the editing or the storyline or the character development?
No, never. You get it because the agents are so flooded with query letters that they have this pot to answer. And it doesn't meet our needs, or it's not what we were looking for. And if they never say you wrote badly, they never say you're a bad writer. They simply say it doesn't meet our needs. It's like the old George Costanza thing. It's not you, it's me.
Right. Yeah. And so how long did it take you to write a book proposal and send out 200 different pitches to publishers?
I started after, the first draft was done after 3 years of writing. So that's when I started. Ironically, on my first query letter, I studied how to do a query letter because it's a very precise science. And they're very adamant about length and what you should include. It's extremely anal. And you go over and over and over, say, did I put the wrong word there? Did I use a conjunction? Should I have used a colon there? You super analyze and you're so studying on the tree, you forget the forest.
It sounds like it would drive me crazy to have to be that analytical about my work.
Oh, and that's what it is. And then it's not so much your work anymore. It's you're trying to pitch in 300 words or less. Your whole life is coming down to one page because this agent in New York is sitting in this office. She's 24 years old. She's never even heard of Vietnam. And you spent five chapters dealing with that whole trauma. And she says, that can't happen because I've never heard of that. Yeah, I had one chapter on Kent State shootings. Daniel was involved in that. And the agent looked and said, that's not possible. That never happened.
I said,
Sweetheart, I was there. So,
I know that because I remember seeing that on the news as a kid.
It was a big deal.
It was huge. I think that was the first college campus shooting ever.
It took me 35 years to enter a voting booth after that.
Jeez, that's insane. I can't believe that blows my mind that people don't even understand, no basic history.
Well, think of it this way. Finding it, we think that we can just write to an agent in New York and they will love us. But think of an agent like speed dating. You're going into a singles bar and you're trying to pick up a girl or a guy with a 90 second pitch that says, hi, I work for Wall Street. I make lots of money and I have no body fat. I will promise you that we'll have a place in the Hamptons within 5 years. And that's the sort of appeal. It has nothing to do with quality. It has to do with 30 seconds you have to introduce for a lifelong relationship. And they want to love your book because they're going to invest in it. And how can they do that in 90 seconds?
Right. And the other thing is, I feel like that way to pitch a book is just so superficial. Like it doesn't tell the story of the book, right? Like it just says this is what my book's about, but it doesn't give the whole context of behind the book and why this book is so great, right? It just says on the surface level, this is what my book looks like.
Absolutely. And in their defense, on Amazon, when a book is posted, it'll give a synopsis. And that synopsis should entice readers to buy that book just based on one paragraph. So, and it's just sheer numbers. If this agent gets 1,000 proposals a week, there's no way no way that they can look at your proposal and give it what it deserves, because they're still spending their nights reading the one they've already accepted. It's just reality. And I started Good Samaritan Home on my own because I felt there was a need and there was nobody to do it. And I did the same thing with the publishing company. I said, there's a need, and now I can publish somebody else's book if I had to, because I can find others like myself who are outsiders. Realistically, what it did was it gave me the freedom, but also I worked my butt off to do this.
All right, well, we're going to take a really quick break right here. When we come back, I'm going to get more John Graham story, because I got some more questions for you, John. This is really great.
Hey, friends and future authors. I know what it's like to sit alone at your desk and to stare at your manuscript and wondering if anybody else out there feels the same as you do. My friend, that is why I created the Publishing for Professionals community, a sanctuary for leaders like you who are crafting books to elevate your thought leadership. Imagine having a professional ecosystem where you can find other professionals who truly understand your struggle and celebrate your victories. A circle which offers genuine support and a place where fellow thought leaders gather. The road to authorship is better traveled together. Come and join an alliance who speaks your language, who recognizes that your book isn't simply just a page with words. It's the process of creating your forever legacy. Join the Publishing for Professionals circle at www.writeforyou.me and click on community. Use the sign-up form and register today to gain confidence alongside others who now share your journey towards authorship.
All right, future authors, we're back with John Graham, and he's telling his story of his book and his, oh my gosh, this journey is crazy. So you said you took 3 years to write the book, and then it was how many years to pitch to 200 publishers?
Well, after 3 years for the first draft, I thought I was done, but it was crap. And you know, looking back at it, you know, you have a tendency to write down rat holes, and then you have to, the rejections actually were quite good, because it taught me to tighten, rewrite. I use a phrase from Doug Moreno that says that I continually re-edit my book and my life so that we both are a finished draft. And that's what it took, a lot of work. I think all in all, I wrote the book again 24 times. But it wasn't until I hit my editor. His name is Ian Tan, and he's ironically out of Malaysia. And we communicated through the email, and he caught the story, and he taught me how to layer in details. Like, what does the moon look like? Don't just say the moon was bright.
Right.
Talk about the sliver of gray that's just peeked over the hill, and the birds suddenly were silent at the oncoming light, and you could feel the moonlight. It's little details that he taught me. You don't say walk into the room. How did they walk in? What were they feeling as they walked in?
What were they smelling as they walked in?
Those are details that took me 2 years. And when it was finally done, we came up with phrases that I never thought possible. Mm-hmm. And that, to me, that's where the real writing comes in, not the first draft.
Right.
It's the 20th draft, where you cut your wrist and you bleed all over it. It's hard work to write.
It is hard work. And you're a trained journalist, so it's not like you were coming in here with no writing background, right? And then and you took a few times to re-edit and redo it. And then at what point did you say, you know, I'm just not going a traditional publisher. I'm just going to make my own company. Like what was the thought process in your head that you made that decision?
I avoided that because self-publishing, if you use that term, it makes it sound like you're going to print 500 copies in your garage and sell them all to your friends at every dinner party. And I refused to do that because I wanted to do traditional, because I felt that working within the structure was important. But the structure simply didn't understand my story. So I had to work. I'm not longer self-publishing. It's independent publishing. And I have taken on that mantle, just like I took on the mantle for Good Samaritan Home. You know, today we have 10 staff and a budget of $2 million annually for Good Samaritan Home. So that's grown from nothing to a viable nonprofit. So the same thing with the book, with enough work and focus, and you bring in the right advisors. That's the key.
That is really key. And speaking of advisors, you said, you went to a literary agent or a PR agent that you worked with?
There's a book called, was it five something for Mari?
I know which one you mean. Yeah.
Murray McBride. It was a great story. But there was a trailer for that book that I was so enamored with. I thought the trailer was beautiful. So I called the publisher and I said, who did your trailer? And I contacted her and I said, I'd like to talk to you about doing a trailer for me. And it turned out that she fell in love with the book.
Oh, amazing.
And I've been with her for 2 years now, and she's a publicist who's taught me how to do all of this. So we work in collaboration. It's like I'm back in school again with her. I'm learning so much. But right now, you know, Amazon ads, for example, are just it's graduate school in tales that I can't even fathom. Mm-hmm. At the end of our conversations, my mind hurts. Right now, I can work on a script for a Facebook video, and I can do it in 10 minutes, and I feel good. But working on an ad or doing the technology to put that video out there hurts my brain.
Yeah, that depends on how tech savvy you are and the tools you use too, because some tools are definitely easier than others for sure. Oh my gosh.
Yeah, and the tech work, even a little thing like you miss a step and you can't do the next. TikTok Studio, for example, I couldn't get the one editing pattern to work. So she taught me how to trick it. You add a video to it, so it perceives what you're posting as a video, so you can edit within the script.
Oh.
And then you pull out the video when you're done.
Got it. Okay.
This technical stuff, I would never know.
Yeah. Yeah. There's definitely a lot of technical stuff in the background. So you published your book. And so when did you decide to submit it for awards? And what was the purpose behind submitting it for awards? Did you want to just get the recognition for the book for the sales, or what was the purpose for that?
Not for the sales. I think it was for the recognition, because when you come in with no literary background, if you don't come in from the insider path of publishers who grew up in that world, if you're an outsider, the rejections were so intense that I began to think I was a bad writer. When I got an award and then a second one and a third one, I said, you know, I am a good writer because experts have said I'm a good writer. And not just the awards, the reviews coming back from the readers have been phenomenal. Right now, I'm running a 4.6 out of 5 on Amazon.
That's amazing.
93% 4 and 5 ratings.
Great. Congratulations. That's awesome. And so besides Amazon, what other places do you like to publish online? Like, do you publish through Drafted Digital? Do you publish, like, did you send your book to the big box stores? Like, where else do you like to publish your book when you're publishing?
I have to lead a lot of this up to Candace is her name. Mm-hmm. He's very, very good at this. So we will do promotions. Right now I'm in Kindle Unlimited. You don't make a lot of money. You make a few parts of a penny per page. But overall, technically, I've sold hundreds of books that way, because what you're doing is you're getting it out there and we're getting the conversation. So I haven't made money at this book, but mm-hmm. I didn't do it for money. I have a day job. I did it for the conversations about second chances. And the current political state has actually made this extremely present. And in fact, that's where my podcasts have taken off. I've done 75 podcasts since August, and it's all about second chances.
Gotcha. And then when you say you've done 75 podcasts, do you have your own podcast, John, or you were interviewing on others' podcasts?
I'm interviewing on others, but it's reached a point now. We are setting up my own podcast called The Voice of Reason.
Awesome.
Conversations around the Algonquin Roundtable.
I love it.
Yeah. The idea is that you and I can just talk about issues without yelling at one another, without finger pointing. It's not saying, are you a Democrat or are you a Republican? Are you a brother or a sister? That's all.
Right.
Do we share a common value and a common purpose together?
Yeah, I think that's definitely a much more holistic way to move forward. Absolutely. Oh my gosh. So John, this has been an awesome conversation. You have dropped so many gems and like really great experiential examples here on today's show. So thank you so much for doing that. Where can people find you and where can people find your book if they want to reach out to you and chat with you and or purchase your book online?
It's actually simple. It's johndavidgraham.com. That's my book site, and that will link to Amazon. That'll link to Good Samaritan Home. There's even a link where you can contact me with a question. But the best part, if you go to Amazon, you can download 3 or 4 chapters for free and just take a look at it.
Awesome. Okay, great. And then for people who are watching on YouTube, we'll have that in the description below. And if you're listening to this on audio, we'll have that in the show notes. Well, John, thank you so much for coming on today and sharing your experience. I know this has been super helpful to my listeners who may be thinking about a traditional publisher and or just, you know, book marketing information in general, because you dropped a lot of really great information. So thank you so much for coming on today to share your experience.
Oh, my pleasure. Anything I can do to help other people. And the key element is do it and redo it and redo it and redo it. Edit your life as well as your book.
Love it. Thank you so much for that great advice.
Hey, my friend, thanks for joining me on the Publishing for Professionals podcast. I hope this episode has equipped you with actionable strategies for your publishing journey. Remember, your expertise becomes truly valuable when it's transformed into a professionally published book that represents your unique brand. The insights we've covered today will hopefully give you another piece of your publishing blueprint. If you found today's discussion valuable, make sure to subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts so you get the next episode dropped right into your podcast player. Each week, we tackle another essential aspect designed specifically for busy professionals like you. Remember to start the dream of writing your book today, because your strategies could be the missing piece in someone else's success puzzle tomorrow.
The information in this podcast is for educational and informational purposes only. The content shared by the host, guests, and any affiliates is not intended to substitute for professional legal or financial advice specific to your situation. Always seek the advice of a qualified professional with any questions you may have. The opinions expressed on the show by the host or guests are the individuals and do not necessarily reflect the views of Unicorn Publishing Company. Unicorn Publishing Company, the host, guests, and affiliates are not responsible or liable for any decisions made by listeners or action taken hereto based on the information discussed in this podcast. By listening to this podcast, you acknowledge and agree to release Unicorn Publishing Company, the host, affiliates, and guests for any liability.